Radio Borders Youth Association. Hello everyone. You're listening to the sound of universal compassion. Today is 17th of November. We will continue listen to Master Tenjin Chosen's previous program, Meditation, Dying, and Karma. And please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello and welcome. I hope your week's gone extremely well, and especially that you've been able to find time to really practice the Buddha's teachings. Over the last few months, we've been going through the graduated path to enlightenment as taught in the Gelugpa tradition of Tibetan Buddhism. Last week, we reached the end of the stage on karma, and this week we're going further to investigate what we must do to attain liberation. You see, if we consider only the topics we've covered so far, that is, the great value of this human rebirth, impermanence and death, the lower realm rebirths, taking refuge in karma, and act according to those, there's a danger that we will only seek to attain high rebirths in cyclic existence in the future and not try for complete liberation. Let's put it this way. In cyclic existence, you can be born in good states like the gods, the asuras and humans, where suffering is comparatively light, or you may find yourself in the lower rebirths, the hell, preta or animal realms, where suffering is very great. You might think, well, I don't want to be born in the lower realms, so I'll do whatever I can to create the causes for rebirth as a god, asura, or human. In other words, you're still thinking of being born in cyclic existence, but just in one of the higher states. What leads us to that decision is comparing this life to those in the lower realms, even to the lives of animals all around us. It's not too difficult to see that this is one of the better lives we can be born into. If we want to be born into a higher realm again, we must create the causes for it and avoid the causes for the lower realms. And that, of course, leads us to karma. If we avoid the 10 non-virtuous actions and practice their opposites, the 10 virtues, we will place the causes for human rebirth on our mind streams. And if we practice powerful concentration, we will be born in one of the various god realms. Now that's all very well. In this way, we might create the causes for many coming lives in higher states. But the problem with cyclic existence still persists. Nothing is ever certain, so sooner or later, we will again be born as an animal, preta, or as a denizen of the hells. Wouldn't it be much better if we could step out of this cycle of existence altogether so that we never have to go to those realms ever again? In fact, we will never again have to suffer as we do. Well, if we want that liberation from cyclic existence, we have to create other causes than just those leading to higher states in cyclic existence. And that's what we're going to discuss in the next few programs. What to do to free ourselves from cyclic existence. But before we go into that now, how about making sure our motivation is correct? Remember, motivation defines the morality of an action, so that if we can set a very high motivation, our actions will have good results. The best motivation is to realize our highest potential so that we have the most power to help other suffering beings. In fact, what can be better than to become the most powerful of all beings, a Buddha, so that you can really help others out of their suffering? At the moment, not being a Buddha, I don't have much power to help anyone. I can't read people's minds and so know for sure what would be best for them. So I can only go on my own limited perception and what people tell me, both of which can be very misleading. To remedy this, I will work to become a Buddha so I can best benefit others, And so let that be the motivation for this program today. Let's take a moment to look at our motivation and change it if it's anything less than that. Thank you. Now, about attaining liberation, this depends on understanding the Four Noble Truths and the 12 links of dependent arising. Of course, anyone who counts themselves a Buddhist knows the Four Noble Truths. The Buddha taught them in his very first teaching, in which he described them as follows. The translation I'm reading here is by Bhikkhu Tanissaro. Now, this, monks, is the Noble Truth of stress. Birth is stressful, aging is stressful, death is stressful. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, and despair are stressful. Association with the unbeloved is stressful. Separation from the loved is stressful. Not getting what is wanted is stressful. In short, the five clinging aggregates are stressful. And this, monks, is the noble truth of the origination of stress, the craving that makes for further becoming, accompanied by passion and delight, relishing now here and now there. That is craving for sensual pleasure, craving for becoming, craving for non-becoming. And this, monks, is the noble truth of the cessation of stress, the remainderless fading and cessation, renunciation, relinquishment, release, and letting go of that very craving. And this, monks, is the noble truth of the way of practice leading to the cessation of stress. Precisely this noble eightfold path, right view, right resolve, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. Vision arose, insight arose, discernment arose, knowledge arose, illumination arose within me with regard to things never heard before. This is the noble truth of stress. This noble truth of stress is to be comprehended. This noble truth of stress has been comprehended. Vision arose, insight arose, discernment arose, knowledge arose, illumination arose within me with regard to things never heard before. This is the noble truth of the origination of stress. This noble truth of the origination of stress is to be abandoned. This noble truth of the origination of stress has been abandoned. Vision arose, insight arose, discernment arose, knowledge arose, illumination arose within me with regard to things never heard before. This is the noble truth of the cessation of stress. This noble truth of the cessation of stress is to be directly experienced. This noble truth of the cessation of stress has been directly experienced. Vision arose, insight arose, discernment arose, knowledge arose, illumination arose within me with regard to things never heard before. This is the noble truth of the way of practice leading to the cessation of stress. This noble truth of the way of practice leading to the cessation of stress is to be developed. This noble truth of the way of practice leading to the cessation of stress has been developed. Basically, what the Buddha is saying is no suffering, abandon its source, attain the cessation of suffering, meditate on the path, for if you know suffering, nothing more is to be known. If you abandon the source of suffering, nothing more needs to be abandoned. If you attain the cessation of suffering, nothing more needs to be ceased. And if you meditate on the path, nothing more needs to be meditated on. To escape cyclic existence, we have to realize the last two truths, the truth of cessation of suffering and the truth of the path to that cessation. But to do that, we first have to understand the first two truths, the truth of suffering and the truth of the source of suffering. When we talk about the truth of suffering, we're not talking about breaking a leg or our boyfriend or girlfriend breaking up with us. That is part of it, but a rather small part. We are talking here about how the very nature of our type of existence, and that means the existence of any being in cyclic existence, is dissatisfaction and suffering. In the same way that the nature of cloth is fiber, the nature of our existence is mental disturbance and unhappiness. That means if we want to be free of suffering, We have to step right out of this cyclic existence. We can't just go somewhere else within cyclic existence and hope to find long-term happiness. The greener other side of the hill just doesn't exist. We have to leave cyclic existence completely and forever, and then we will find the peace we're looking for. Then when the Buddha talks about the source or cause of suffering, he means afflictive emotion and karma. And, of course, the main affliction in the operation of cyclic existence is the ingrained ignorance persuading us that things have a self. If we correctly understand these causes of our pain, we're a good way towards putting an end to them. By comparing the peace of liberation with the constant prickliness and various agonies of cyclic existence, we will know which we would rather experience and then be able to start practicing to get there. So, do you want liberation, or do you think that this cyclic existence is okay? Keep listening to our coming programs, and I think those who consider cyclic existence pleasant enough may well change their minds. Anyway, I talk a lot about cyclic existence, but what does that actually mean? Perhaps it sounds like something that happens on a fairground, like an addiction to a Ferris wheel or merry-go-round. And it is kind of like that. Cyclic, of course, means going in cycles. So cyclic existence means cycling from one existence to another, and then to another, and then to another, and so on. Roughly, it means constantly taking rebirth in one of the six realms: hells, preta, animal, human, asura, or god. More specifically, though, it means taking the four or five aggregates driven by karma and afflictive emotion. Every time we take rebirth in cyclic existence, it is with five or four aggregates. The aggregates, or collection of things which make us up, are listed as form, in other words our body and the objects of our senses, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness. Compositional factors group together everything else once we've extracted form, feeling, discrimination, and consciousness, like the 49 mental factors and so on. So mostly, beings take rebirth with these five, but in the higher states of cyclic existence, beings don't have form. They only exist as a consciousness, if you like, with the other four aggregates. Form is still there in a sense, because it is latent and will appear when the beings take a lower rebirth again after the higher realm existence ends. So in effect, cyclic existence refers to this taking of rebirth with the four or five aggregates again and again under the power of afflictive emotion and karma. And that is how we will understand the definition from now on. We have to add this last bit about afflictive emotion and karma, because it is said that very, very highly realized and powerful beings who want to help others can choose to take rebirth with the aggregates if that will accomplish their purpose. People like myself with little or no accomplishment don't choose to take rebirth or not, or even which rebirth we will go to. It's decided primarily by our karma, that is the actions we have completed and the imprints left on our minds. And that karma comes about through afflictive emotions. So you see, the difference between the way I will take rebirth and the way a great bodhisattva takes rebirth is quite marked. My rebirth is beyond my control, whereas that of the great bodhisattva is completely within his or her choice. Anyway, anybody who can choose if they want to be reborn or not is no longer in cyclic existence at all. Such a person has seen reality as it is. Sometimes people might describe a stressful workplace as if it were cyclic existence, but this is not cyclic existence. It's the place in which cyclic existence takes place, but it's not cyclic existence itself. If it were, you could just buy a lifestyle block, grow tomatoes, and you'd be free of cyclic existence. Unfortunately, it's not that easy, and even a lifestyle block can be a place where cyclic existence is found, not in itself, but with the people living on it. This is how one master has described cyclic existence. He writes, "The five aggregates of an ordinary person, contaminated by delusion and karma, are pushed uncontrollably from rebirth to rebirth, realm to realm. Without choice, the delusions continue to arise, creating more contaminated karma and thus perpetuating suffering rebirth after suffering rebirth. This is cyclic existence. And this is the object of renunciation, the state from which to be freed, the bondage from which to be liberated. Now I hope you have a good understanding of what we mean by cyclic existence, as it will be mentioned quite a lot as we go on. Just keep in mind taking aggregates uncontrollably again and again under the power of karma and afflictive emotion. So when we talk about liberation, we mean precisely freedom from being compelled by karma and afflictive emotion, especially into repeated rebirths. For once we get rid of karma and afflictive emotion, our suffering will be permanently over, never to return. Unfortunately, we cannot just hear about the Buddha's teachings and then say we are free. We have to practice to change our minds. When we practice well and gain an understanding of how our mind works and confidence and skill in our meditation, the environment no longer matters because the mind always stays peaceful and unstressed. Even if the life of a good practitioner is very busy, they don't become perturbed but are able to sail through their days calmly and easily. When my teacher was still alive, I went to Mongolia, where he had been teaching for 2 years, to help bring him back to New Zealand. He was an important teacher in the monastery there, and so had a small kind of apartment with a bedroom, kitchen, and bathroom. While I was there, lay people would come by to pay their respects and ask advice from 7 or 8 in the morning to up to 9 or 10 at night. He also had monastic duties to perform, and so on. I only saw him once disgruntled by a visitor, and that was because a woman had come to ask advice, but refused what he told her to do, and did what she wanted to do anyway. That didn't particularly worry him, but he wondered why she came to ask his advice if she'd already made up her mind what to do. Other than that, he was always cheerful and kind, with everyone who knocked on his door. Even when his room was already full of people, others would come. I tried to tell them that he was busy and couldn't see them just then, but they would just push their way into the room, and Rinpoche would greet them politely, squeeze them in somewhere, and offer them a cup of tea. I think if that was me, I would have gone nuts at some stage. But that just shows the difference between his and my mental training. He had no attachment to anything, his possessions, his time, his body, nothing. And so he was able to meet any situation with equanimity and happiness. It is only when we attach importance to me and mine that the mind becomes tight and agitated and we create all sorts of problems and difficulties. With a mind of non-attachment to anything, even our own bodies, we can possess all kinds of wealth and status and not create suffering in relation to them. And so a rich person with many possessions and lots of attachment towards them is in a worse situation than a poor person who has few things but has no attachment to them at all. If we want to stop creating the causes to continue in cyclic existence, it's a good idea to develop the mind of non-attachment to everything. Even if we have a very comfortable house with many lovely furnishings, a 52-inch TV and a red Lamborghini, we can contemplate that in comparison, somebody like the Queen of England has many more and better things than ourselves. She has a choice of 5 very grand residences to live in. Furthermore, this life is very short, and in our next life, we could be a rat making a nest out of old newspaper and eating all the old food scraps that in this life we automatically turf into the rubbish bin. Wouldn't it be better to give up our attachment to all these possessions and concentrate on creating positive karma through keeping ethics, non-attachment, generosity, and benefiting others? Then at least we will have something positive to take with us in the future, and we may even avoid a rat rebirth. Now this is all very easy to say, but it can be difficult to free ourselves from our acquisitive habits and attachments, can't it? If we don't really pay much attention to our lives, we can be taken in by many attractive things or people. So we need to really look through the surface glitter, which is so important, especially in our Western culture, to the ongoing dissatisfaction that lies behind it. In the same way as a prisoner must know the faults of being in prison to wish to break free, we need to consider what it's really like in cyclic existence and develop a firm revulsion towards it if we want to reach liberation. Therefore, we will consider the disadvantages of cyclic existence that bring us such suffering. Normally, when we contemplate suffering in a temporal sense, we would first think about the cause, then the suffering itself, then the way to be free of it, and finally the state of being free. This makes sense, as it's the way the whole thing plays out in time. Cause, suffering, path to be free of suffering, end of suffering. But the Buddha taught in a different sequence. Suffering, cause, end, and path. Why? Well, if you think about it, that's the way of practice. If we don't understand how we suffer first, we won't want to break free of suffering. Again, if you're in a prison but you don't know you are, you probably won't have any wish to be free. Only when we identify our experience in cyclic existence as true suffering will we have the understanding that leads to liberation. And if we want liberation, what do we have to do to get it? Well, in the same way as if you want a stream to stop flowing, you have to block its source, if we want to stop suffering, we must stop the cause of suffering. So that is why the Buddha taught the cause or source of suffering next. Seeing that suffering is caused by karma, which in its turn is driven by afflictive emotion brought about by the grasping of true inherent existence, we will understand the source of true suffering. And as the mind is impermanent, we can cease this grasping of true existence and so put an end to afflictive emotions and karma. Thus, the Buddha taught cessation third. And when we decide to put an end to suffering, we will investigate how to go about it. And that leads to the fourth noble truth, the path. It's like getting rid of an illness. First, you have to know that you're sick. The swine flu is a good example. Some people have it, but show no symptoms, so don't even know that they're carrying it. However, those who do get symptoms soon know they have the disease. Then they have to find the cause of the illness. In the case of swine flu, the scientists have already done that for us. And then see if it's curable. Seeing that it is, you go ahead and take the medicine the doctor prescribes. Though I don't think Tamiflu will bring us any closer to enlightenment. In Buddhism, we talk a lot about renunciation. What is it that we are renouncing? Well, it's easy to think that we renounce all the good things in life. Good food, sex, movies, and so on. But that's not what we're giving up, although we may have to refrain from such things initially to renounce what we really want to give up, suffering. Obviously, if indulging what is commonly called the good things of life brings us more attachment, it's better that we put them as far from ourselves as possible. That's why some monks live in isolated places, far from temptations, as it were. Without the distractions of attachments, they're better able to practice meditation and eventually free themselves from all suffering. It's worthwhile to note that once a monk has become an arhat or a great bodhisattva, they really don't need to abstain from such things, as they no longer see with a mind that generates attachment. They're already free from suffering. Renunciation lies at the base of all higher realizations in all the traditions of Buddhism. When Jesus said it was harder for a rich man to attain heaven than for a camel to pass through the eyes of a needle, he could have been talking of someone who didn't have renunciation. Unless we develop renunciation, the attractions of cyclic existence will always appear too attractive for us to embark on the practices of concentration and wisdom that we need to attain liberation. For instance, we might have set aside time for meditation, but then the thought of a cup of coffee intrudes, and before we know it, we've laid aside our practice for the sake of coffee beans. A verse out of one text says that we should react to cyclic existence in the same way as we would react if our hair and clothes were on fire. as urgently as we would put that fire out, so we are encouraged to urgently practice to attain liberation. Now you may ask, well, what exactly do we mean by the suffering of cyclic existence? After all, in New Zealand, in terms of material comfort at least, we're not all that badly off. Most of us live in presentable houses and have enough to eat every day, and even if we have some difficulty, help is available. Compared to the people who live in the slums, like those of the movie Slumdog Millionaire, we're quite well off. It's not really like our hair and clothes are on fire. However, as you will know from your own experience, it's not material comfort only that ensures our happiness or freedom from suffering. The problem of our suffering goes much deeper than whether we have the latest iPhone or not, and mental suffering is always worse than physical suffering. So even if our material situation is by all standards pretty good, we can still be experiencing a lot of misery. This is quite obvious in very famous and rich people who always seem to be in the psychological wars, drug dependency, and so on. The most obvious example that springs to mind is, of course, Michael Jackson, who led a fabulous lifestyle, but you could hardly say he was the happiest man on earth. When we contemplate the sufferings of cyclic existence, we can refer back to that first teaching of the Buddha where he said, birth is stressful, aging is stressful, death is stressful, sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, and despair is stressful, association with the unbeloved is stressful, separation from the loved is stressful, not getting what is wanted is stressful. In short, the five clinging aggregates are stressful. Here, he enumerates eight ways of understanding the sufferings of cyclic existence. Birth, aging, sickness and death, meeting those we don't like, not meeting those who we like, and not getting what we want, as well as taking the five aggregates. But we can look at it also in six ways, or a condensation into the three types of suffering. In our next program, we will start going through all these so that we get a really thorough understanding of how uncomfortable this type of existence is. But now, we've come to the end of today's program. Please take a minute to dedicate any positive potential we've developed from this discussion today to achieving your purpose, particularly, if you can, to gaining enlightenment to benefit not only yourself, but all others as well. Thank you. I hope you have a very good week and will join us again next week. Goodbye.